Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We're excited about the next hour here where we're going to talk a lot of NFL news, a big series in Milwaukee, talking about the Brewers and the Cubs. We've got also Eric Halterman coming to join us to talk a little bit about the trade deadline, some of the things we can expect both from a betting and fantasy, and especially from a fantasy standpoint. We got Cortland Sutton getting paid. We'll talk about play it or pass it. And then we'll finish with our best bets for the day. Nick Whalen, let's start off talking a little Cowboys. Tyler Guyton suffered a knee fracture out 4 to 6 weeks. At least it's not a torn ACL. But this is an offensive line that isn't great. We were talking a little bit about this earlier on the SiriusXM Fantasy Show. This is already projected to be around number 20 among offensive lines.
Yeah, I'll tell you right away, Jeff, I don't pretend to be an offensive lineman expert. I've never played offensive line, as you could probably tell by my stature and frail body. So I default to the experts when it comes to O-lines. And, you know, canvassed a bunch of sources. Really, nobody has this Cowboys team ranked higher than like 17th or 18th in terms of the best offensive lines in football. And, of course, that was including a healthy Tyler Guyton, who, yeah, by the way, yes, he is one of the starting tackles for the Cowboys. But if you look at PFF, if that's a trusted source for you, he was the 73rd best offensive tackle in the NFL last season. The Cowboys' best tackle was Terrence Steele, who's still the starter on the other side. He was the 43rd best tackle in football. So it's the offensive line is no longer a strength for the Dallas Cowboys. I think we were conditioned for so long during the peak Ezekiel Elliott years to just think like, man, this is a great offensive line. It's the Dallas Cowboys. All of those guys have moved on at this point. And, you know, you have a couple of solid guards. You know, Tyler Smith is a good player. They spent a first round pick on Tyler Booker. We'll see what he turns into. You had a decent center in Cooper Beebe. So this is not, it's not a disaster at offensive line, but it's certainly not a strength. And, you know, Tyler Guyton missing time to begin the year, which to me seems pretty likely, certainly doesn't help things whatsoever. I mean, you still got the standoff going on with Micah Parsons that you have to figure out. You know, I think you have a lot of questions about the running back room. That's certainly not going to help offset what's a shaky offensive line. And on top of all that, Jeff, you know, you have the Philadelphia Eagles staring at you in week one. Dallas currently a 7-point favorite for that one. I will say though, beyond that Philly game in week one, you know, if you're dealing with a potential Parsons holdout, if you're dealing with a, you know, your starting tackle missing games, they do get the Giants in week two. That should be very winnable. They play the Bears in week three, the Packers in week four, the Jets in week five, and the Carolina Panthers in week six. So at least a manageable early season slate.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the Eagles, I mean, they're going to be having their own secondary issues to try to work in there. That they're trying to, you know, change a personnel, a lot of change personnel on the defensive side all around. And yet, I feel pretty good about the Eagles side of this in week one. Not going to put it out there as a bet yet. Although if I'm going to, I probably should. Yeah. But, you know, moving it off seven seems like a difficult thing to do anyhow. That's maybe why I don't feel a whole lot of pressure there. But that Cowboys secondary has got a ton of stuff to deal with there. As well. So lots of injuries, lots of long-term injuries. I am worried about that just a little bit there. If I'm a Cowboys fan, obviously Micah Parsons isn't taken care of yet and doesn't seem to be that this is a weird one here because there's a lot of talk, but you not with each other. It's a really weird situation going on with the Cowboys and Micah Parsons.
Yeah, there was a report earlier this morning that, you know, the two sides are essentially as far apart as they've been at any point in these negotiations. We've certainly heard plenty from the Cowboys. We've heard plenty from Parsons. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of one-on-one conversations happening there. And look, unfortunately, this is not out of character for Jerry Jones or the Cowboys. Like he seems to be more than happy to pay the mid-level guys. You know, it's like, oh, Jake Ferguson, here's your contract coming off of a bad and injured year. But we went through this with Dak. We went through this with CeeDee Lamb. We went through this with Micah Parsons. Like, these are the guys who should be obvious paydays, right? I mean, Micah Parsons might be the most talented defensive player in the NFL. You pay that guy top of market money, especially given his age, right? This isn't Terry McLaurin. He's not 30 years old. It should just be a total no-brainer to me.
It should be. It should really be so. It's just that the market has been reset with all these pass rusher signings, you know, starting with Myles Garrett. Yeah. This offseason. And Trey Hendrickson's just sitting there twiddling his thumbs, waiting for him to get taken care of there. But, and unfortunately, that's all that's going to happen there. At least Parsons is at camp, even if his activity is a little bit limited there. Let's move on. Let's talk a little baseball. Huge series going on in Milwaukee, Nick. Brewers, big win over the Cubs. shaky start from Jacob Mizorowski. You know, I was on the over 14 and a half outs recorded, 40 pitches in the first inning later. That one was done, unfortunately, but still managed 80 pitches, but, you know, got yanked after the fourth in that one. Still did get 7 strikeouts, though.
Yeah, kind of back-to-back weird starts now for Mizorowski since the All-Star break. You know, he was limited in that Seattle start right after the break. He only went 3 2/3, you know, threw 80 pitches last night, but didn't make it out of the fourth inning. Like you said, still managed to strike out 7. And this was, yeah, kind of a disaster for him early on. I think you could argue last night was the biggest game to date of the season for the Milwaukee Brewers. Tonight might be the second biggest game of the season, and they spotted the Cubs a 3-0 lead in the top of the first. You know, first three batters, you get a single, a walk, and an infield single. Mizorowski throws a wild pitch that leads to a run. He had a brutal throwing error, just the classic, like, pitcher can't throw it to first, threw it like 10 feet over the first baseman's head. Couple runs score on that, and you're thinking, man, you know, we really felt good about this game with Mizorowski going, but, you know, ended up being a really big night for Christian Yelich. Isaac Collins had a huge 2 RBI single in the third inning that kind of brought Milwaukee back into it. Andrew Vaughn continues to rake. Sal Frelick, Yelich all homered last night. So now we look ahead to game two of that series in Milwaukee. Brewers minus 132 on the money line tonight. Quinn Priester going up against Colin Ray. I did, of course, Jeff, mosey over to the NL futures market after last night, kind of reveling in a Brewers win. Brewers plus 650 right now to win the National League. Cubs are plus 550. Brewers still plus money to take the NL Central. They do have a one game lead, plus 100. Cubs minus 120. Do you agree with that?
I think this is contingent on what happens at the trade deadline. I think the Cubs are more likely to make a bigger move at the deadline than the Brewers, but both have the capacity to disappoint us. Not to diminish the work that Danny Jansen's going to do for them. You know, the Brewers did do the big NL Central swinging trade for Danny Jansen, but I tend to think the Cubs are going to get reinforcements on their pitching staff. Now, the question is inventory, obviously. What's out there? What is truly out there? Maybe they won't be able to do as much. We lost a couple of relievers due to injuries and weird suspensions. So it might be harder for them to be able to pull that trade off now. They might be sufficient cover for Tom Ricketts and company to say, well, we were going to make a trade, but then, you know, Bautista got hurt or something like that. They could say, we're in on talks of that. You know, a little dodge that a lot of teams and management tend to do. But I still think that the Cubs have more capacity to do a deal. Whether they will or not is up for debate. But both teams have loaded farm systems, by the way. They have prospects to deal.
Yeah.
So that allows a certain amount of creativity on the dollar side of things as well. So we'll see if they're willing to dip into those farm systems to make a trade of some sort there. Speaking of trades, Eugenio Suarez got hit by a pitch on the hand again, just like he did in the All-Star game. This one looked a little worse against Detroit. No fracture was detected there. We're talking about a guy that I think a lot of teams were looking to trade for Suarez, obviously. A lot of teams need a third baseman, including the Cubs, including my Reds, maybe even your Brewers a little bit there. I think they could use an upgrade there. And that would be, if this was any sort of injury, that takes another significant name off the block.
Yeah, I think we can breathe at least a short-term sigh of relief, right, with the x-rays coming back negative. But that was an interesting one on, you know, following that on Twitter last night, where it's like, no, nobody's relating this to the Diamondbacks. It's like, oh no, how does this impact the trade deadline? Not how does this impact his current team, or how does this impact Eugenio Suarez himself? And look, Arizona's now lost 3 in a row. They're 4-6 in their last 10, 7 out in the NL wild card, which the Miami Marlins, by the way, basically have the same record as the Diamondbacks. That kind of snuck up on me. I think it makes sense for them to trade him. There were some Tigers rumors cropping up earlier in the week. I think there is a very good likelihood that he ends up on the move. But I'll ask you, Jeff, you follow the trade deadline as closely as anybody. When we look back, when pencils are down on Thursday evening, are we going to look back and say, man, what a great deadline? Or are we going to say there are a lot of rumors, but not that much really happened?
I think closer to the latter. I don't, especially everybody needs pitching and there's no pitching available. That seems like the theme of this trade deadline there. I would love to be proven wrong. I'd love for there to be a big blockbuster deal. But when the best pitcher getting traded is Sandy Alcantara or Merrill Kelly, it's hard to get too excited. You're going to see some good relief pitchers maybe. And again, poor Merrill Kelly's just taking strays from us there. Nothing wrong with him. He's a cromulent pitcher. That's the upside, though. I mean, some teams desperately need a cromulent pitcher. They take that. The Cubs could use that probably. I don't trust Colin Ray, their starter today. I think they could use an upgrade over him. The Yankees really could use another starting pitcher. Kelly pitched great against the Yankees earlier this year. Maybe they go that route. Zach Gallen pitched great against the Yankees earlier too. Maybe he goes that way. Again, that's expensive. Maybe that they're not going that way, but, and Gallen has pitched a little better lately. So maybe that's encouraging a team to trade for him. But, and that's the real problem is I don't see too many good pitchers at their peak that are going to get dealt right now. Right. Unless some team just shocks the world and decides that this is a great market. I'm going to get, if they get that Godfather offer from the Mets or the Cubs, they'd have to take it there. Unfortunately, I don't see too many pitchers worthy of that. Speaking of the Mets, walked it off against the Padres yesterday. They're playing awfully well. We'll talk more about them a little bit later, but I want to make sure we get a couple of things in here first. Did you know that RotoWire has a brand new look and even better fantasy football draft tools for the 2025 season? Whether you're using our draft assistant to get real-time insights as you draft, customizing your own strategy with the draft plan creator, or testing scenarios with the powerful draft simulator, RotoWire gives you everything you need to draft with confidence. And right now, VSiN followers get an exclusive offer. Head to rotowire.com and our promo code VSiN at checkout and get 15% off any RotoWire product. That's rotowire.com, promo code VSIN. About 30 seconds here. Hollywood Brown left with an ankle injury today. Seems pretty minor, but something to monitor, Nick.
Yeah, I think we dodged a bullet on this one. Something that looked maybe a little bit more severe at first, kind of dealing with the same thing with Malik Nabers as well. It was down on the turf, able to walk off under his own power. And Xavier Worthy out in KC might be dealing with a concussion. So some minor setbacks for some big name receivers.
Indeed. We got a major segment coming up next. Play it or pass it, both NFL and baseball style. Coming up next here on Prop Points.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You've been waiting for it. It's here. It's time for Play It or Pass It here on Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. We are with rotowire.com. We're going to hit a few favorite NFL props that's picked out by producer Michael Cohen, and Nick is going to choose whether to play it or pass it here, maybe with a little bit of analysis mixed in. Let's start off with the Niners. Brock Purdy, over 3,800 and a half passing yards, -110 over at the DraftKings Sportsbook. Nick, play it or pass it?
All right, this is a good one to start out on. I think a fair number. I think it's a fair price at -110. Purdy did go barely over this number last season, but missed a couple of games. So he did it in 15 games, threw for almost 4,300 yards 2 years ago in 16 games. So we've seen him do this now in two consecutive years. You look at the NFL overall last season, 11 quarterbacks reached this number. There were still a handful of quarterbacks who started all 17 and did not get there. Kyler Murray, Bo Nix, Josh Allen, CJ Stroud, Jaden Daniels, and Caleb Williams. I do tend to think that if Brock Purdy stays healthy, he probably gets here. We talk about this all the time. These are almost more health bets than they are statistical bets, especially with a proven quarterback like him. But we have a lot of questions, I think, right now about this offense. You know, you have big question marks in the wide receiving core. Juwan Jennings wants a new contract. He's also a little bit banged up. Ricky Pearsall going into year two, missed half of his rookie season. Deebo Samuel's moved on. What's going on health-wise with Brandon Ayuk? I also think the health of Christian McCaffrey matters here. You know, 2 years ago, CMC provided over 550 receiving yards for Brock Purdy on 67 catches, 83 targets. So I think if he stays healthy, you know, that's an added weapon in the passing game that probably helps Brock Purdy go over this number. And one thing I thought was interesting, Jeff, when I was researching this, you know, the 49ers as a team have finished fourth in total passing yards in each of the last two seasons, despite relatively low volume. I mean, bottom 10 in pass attempts last season. They were dead last in 2023 when Brock Purdy threw for over 4,200 yards. So really efficiency has been the name of the game. I do think Purdy gets here. You know, if this is a gun to my head, are you betting it? Yes or no? I would say probably, but at the same time, you know, just a little too much injury risk with some of the surrounding players. You know, this is not one that's an appealing enough price at -110 that I'm running to the window for it.
Right. I get that there. And that's the thing. There are many other fish in the sea. You know, let's go fishing elsewhere there if you're not running. You know, if you're that excited, excited about it there, you know, we all have bankroll limitations. Let's pick ones that we like better there, and I'm sure we'll find them there. All right, let's move on to the next NFL one here. Bucky Irving, over 1025 and a half rushing yards, -115. In fantasy drafts, he's going mid to late second round for the Bucks. So are you playing or passing 1025 and a half rushing yards for Bucky Irving?
I think we'll play this one. Obviously, once again, requires Bucky Irving to stay healthy, but, you know, went over this number as a rookie, 5.4 yards per carry, you know, was one of the more dynamic running backs in the league by the end of the season, and really didn't start seeing, you know, close to a starter's level workload until later in the year. And even then, he was still splitting snaps at a pretty decent rate with Rashad White and to a lesser degree, Sean Tucker. So if we're of the belief that Bucky Irving is seeing even a 65-70% snap share to begin the year, I mean, that would be significantly higher than where he was for most of last season. And I think, at least in the fantasy world, that is the expectation. You know, he could probably even miss a couple of games and still go over this number. You know, a lot of the value for him in fantasy is what he does as a pass catcher, but this is low enough that I am absolutely intrigued. You know, you look at the final nine games of last season, Jeff, and again, for a lot of those games, he was still in a timeshare, averaged 87 yards per game in those final nine, including the postseason. So at that pace, he would go over this number in about 12 games.
Yeah, he would. So it's just a question, did he continue on that new offensive coordinator? Does that change? Does the Tristan Wirfs injury influence this at all? These are things that we all have to kind of worry about there. So it's an interesting thing, but man, I love the talent. Every time I don't draft him in the second round, I feel a little bit of regret. I'm going to have Bucky Irving in at least one league somewhere this year. Probably it's because I haven't had any early picks. I'm always drafting mid or late, Nick. I'm very rarely drafting early in the first round so far. I think that's going to change later on. I won't force it. Like, I'm not going to take him over Josh Jacobs or Jonathan Taylor, but it's close for me. It's really close.
It's an upside.
Let's move on.
I think, especially if you're comparing him to those two veterans.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on. Davante Adams, over 950 and a half receiving yards, minus 105. Play it or pass it.
Man, producer Michael in his bag once again with this one, Jeff. This one is so, so tough for me. You know, Davante Adams has not gone under this number since 2017. That was a season in which Brett Hundley started more games than Aaron Rodgers for the Packers due to injury. Orleans Darkwa was the Giants starting running back the last time Davante Adams went under this number. So suffice it to say, it has been a while. Look, he showed very few signs of decline, but he is turning 33 on Christmas Eve. So late in the regular season, should be a relatively narrow tree of pass catchers in LA. You know, we saw Matthew Stafford throw for almost 3,800 yards in 16 games last season. So I think if Davante Adams stays healthy, there's a pretty good chance he goes over this number. But I'll tell you, Jeff, I would rather bet on Davante Adams' touchdown production than yards. I think that's going to be a little bit more bankable. 8.5 is the number right now. A little aggressive, but you're getting that at plus money. Had 8 touchdowns last year, 7, by the way, in 11 games with the New York Jets. He had 8 touchdowns in Vegas the year before. Final 6 games of last season, he was at his best. 41 catches on 68 targets, 96 yards per game, 6 touchdowns in that span. It's going to come down to the red zone production. You know, Stafford was a fairly high volume red zone quarterback last season, 8th in total attempts, 6th in attempts inside the 10-yard line, but he completed just 46% of his passes in the red zone, 41% of his passes inside the 10. Those are horrible, horrible numbers. I think Davante Adams really helps that. I went as far, Jeff, as to go over to the touchdown log over on Stathead. Davante Adams has 103 career receiving touchdowns in the regular season. 75 of those, 73%, have come in the red zone. Over half have come inside the 10-yard line. And a third of those career touchdowns, 34, have come inside the 5. So I think if the Rams are willing to kind of commit to using Davante Adams in that role that we were so familiar with during his days in Green Bay, he should be able to rack up a ton of touchdowns in this offense. And by the way, currently 10th all time in receiving touchdowns, just 2 behind Mike Evans for the active lead. There's an outside chance he could crack the top 5 with a couple more decent seasons.
You're assuming your anti-guy Mike Evans doesn't continue to add to those touchdowns himself.
Well, we'll see,
Nick.
We'll see.
But it's so funny you brought that setup, because I was just going to give you a quick either or. Who's more likely to hit 950 and a half? Your fade Mike Evans or Davante Adams? Similar age, similar consistency log here.
It's got to be Davante Adams, man. I'm not going to go back on everything I've said on this show about Mike Evans.
Okay. I just wanted to throw that out there. They're very, very similar players in that respect.
They are.
Recently paid Cortland Sutton over 6.5 TDs, minus 130 receiving TDs. Not that he's going to get any rushing ones, but over 6.5 receiving TDs, minus 130. Player to pass it.
Yeah, I don't mind this one. You know, the minus 130 price isn't overly appealing. Has gone over this number in the last two seasons. He was top 10 in red zone targets among receivers a year ago. 6 of his touchdowns did come in the red zone. I do worry a little bit, though. Yeah, they have another option in the red zone with Evan Engram on the roster this year. So I, unlike Davante Adams, I would actually rather bet the yardage for Sutton than I would the touchdowns. 875.5 is the number. So this will be an official pass on the over 6.5 receiving touchdowns. I will instead play the yardage prop. Before we talk a little baseball here, this is it. It's the final week to grab VSiN's football special for just $175. It's your all-access pass to VSiN Pro across every sport we cover from now through the Super Bowl. The NFL betting guide is already live. The college football betting guide hits next week. You don't want to miss either of those. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber right now, and you'll get a daily email with all the best bets from hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to VSiN.com's analytics, tools, and betting systems. Lock it in before July 31st. You got two more days over at VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Jeff, we got a couple baseball props to throw your way before we talk to our guy, Eric Halterman. Play it or pass it, Tyler Glasnow, 8-plus strikeouts tonight at plus 125.
I'm going to play it. Yoshi Yamamoto had 9 Ks against the Reds just yesterday on that one there. Reds strike out 22.5% of the time against righties. Glasnow has a 31.7% K percentage. Even though he's hit the 8 strikeout number twice so far, that's mostly a function of just length of start. He's getting stretched out now. I really like the that we're getting plus odds on this too, plus 125. So let's play it.
All right, one more baseball prop for you. We'll finish out the show, of course, with plenty of baseball bets for tonight's slate. Cal Raleigh, 1-plus RBI tonight, Jeff, minus 110. Play it or pass it.
Oh, boy, this is juicy. I don't even mind the minus 110. I'm going to play this one. And this is all, I mean, it's on the merits of Raleigh, sure, but it's also, hey, it's Luis Severino Day in Sacramento. You know I like that office joke. I like Luis Severino Day in Sacramento. Here's the number, the gruesome nasty numbers for Severino at home. 6.68 ERA, 1.62 WHIP at home. He's way worse. He's been on record saying how much he hates pitching there. So let's let Rally profit off of that there. I'm playing this one very comfortably. This is probably the easiest player to pass that I've done in a while. Before we were doing Rate That Prop, and it might have been my first ever 5. Michael, you did well.
Wow, there we go. Kudos to our guy, Michael Cohen, always supplying us with great props on the show. We're talking baseball trade deadline and some bets for tonight with our guy, Eric Halterman, coming up next.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson here with Nick Whalen. Joining us now on the Progressive guest line is our good friend Eric Halterman. You've seen him many times before, our features editor over at RotoWire, our go-to guy when we want to talk baseball. And with the trade deadline coming up on Thursday, who better to talk to than Eric? Eric, welcome. Let's talk a little Yankees. They don't have Judge. They need help in the field. They're getting Luis Gil back in the rotation over the weekend. I'm dubious that's going to have a massive impact, especially initially on. They need help in the rotation and the bullpen too. They just need help all around.
Yeah, and man, they need Aaron Judge back too. When you have a player who's that good, well, your whole team projects to be great, but then when you take an 11-win player or whatever he's going to be, 9, 10, 11 war is what he tends to be worth these days. When you remove that, suddenly you can go from a team that should win 95 games to a team that should win 85. I definitely would say that his health probably matters more than any potential trade they could make, but I do like the nice small deal that they made to acquire Ryan McMahon. Covers one hole in that lineup. They've been a stars and scrubsy team there around Judge for quite a while, and improving those scrubs. I mean, Ryan McMahon is not a scrub. He's not a star hitter or anything like that, but he's a viable option. So adding some pieces there, but man, this season's already looking kind of dicey with the Blue Jays pulling away. And if they don't get Aaron Judge back to being Aaron Judge, if he comes back and is only, 80% of himself, this is not looking like one of the top contenders in baseball, I would say.
To that point, you know, we've been talking about their chances of making the playoffs a couple of times. I did this early in the season with the Braves, and the Braves was taking a turn south since then. But the Yankees currently -650 to make the playoffs, +500 to miss the playoffs, +250 to win the AL East. It's funny, though, they have better World Series odds than they do the Blue Jays, even though the Blue Jays, at least that was as of yesterday, even though the Blue Jays have better odds to win the division. Anything on there just jumps out as you as actionable?
I mean, if you buy that Judge is going to be okay and you buy that the team's going to make the playoffs, it still is a team with one of the best lineups in baseball, even if so much of that value is concentrated in one player. If he's there, they do still have one of the best lineups in baseball. They've got good names at the front of the rotation. This is just one of the most fragile good teams in baseball. So I can understand why the odds would say that, hey, if they get there, they're still going to be one of the better teams. I mean, this reminds me of a discussion that we were having about Atlanta early in the season, where their, you know, World Series odds, pennant odds, that sort of thing, was painting them as a much better team than their division odds, their odds to make the playoffs, because when a team has talent and isn't performing up to that talent, you still got to figure once you get into a short MLB postseason, I mean, these series are only 3-5 games, they can rebound from a shaky regular season. So I don't hate the fact that some of those odds are still painting the Yankees as one of the best teams in baseball. It's just really so much relies on Aaron Judge. And that would make me pretty nervous as a bettor, just not knowing exactly who he's going to be when he comes back.
We're talking with Eric Halterman, one of our MLB experts over at RotoWire here on Prop Points, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Eric, we haven't had a ton of fireworks so far leading up to the deadline. We'll see what happens over the next 48 hours. But I think part of the reason for that is, you know, especially in the American League, it's really difficult to draw the line between contender and seller. Is there a team or teams in either league that you're looking at right now and saying, man, it could go either way, but I think they'll be aggressive, or, you know, maybe this team could surprisingly back their way out of the wild card race?
Yeah, just how fun of a deadline we get basically depends on how many teams deciding they're not in it. I think, for example, the Royals, they look like they're still actually thinking of themselves as a contender, despite being very much on the fringes of the wild card race. Seth Lugo was a piece that looked like he could be one of the better starters moved at the deadline. Instead, they signed him to an extension. They're acquiring some lesser outfielders too, like Adam Frazier, to cover up for some of their deep, deep holes in the outfield. So if teams like that think they're buyers, I look at also, say, the Rangers. If the Rangers had decided to sell, suddenly Jacob deGrom, if he was out there, this could be a very different deadline, but they have made a charge up the standings. I think we're looking at the Diamondbacks, who were right in that mix and who have already decided they are on the selling side. They have more pieces still to go. Eugenio Suarez, Zach Gallen, maybe more beyond that. Look at the Cardinals as well. They're a team that is right in that mix and could have decided that they're going to try to get over the line, but looks like they might be leaning towards selling. It looks like, unfortunately, Sonny Gray has said he's staying put, which means that's another top pitcher who could have moved, who looks like he's not going to. But the Cardinals, if they move, say, Nolan Arenado, that would be another big bat there. Could be a lot of competition for third baseman at this deadline between Arenado, if he's on the block, Eugenio Suarez, and, say, could the Mets get creative and move Mark Vientos, a major league proven player to a certain extent, to try to get help elsewhere. I think third base is definitely a position to watch. But again, a lot's going to come down to these final couple days. If those borderline teams do decide to be sellers, then suddenly we have enough pieces on the block to have an exciting trade deadline.
Yeah, and I'm just looking for like one good starting pitcher to get dealt, whether it's Mackenzie Gore or Dylan Cease, Shane Bieber maybe, although that's almost a leap of faith at this point in time with Bieber there. The Guardians might be one of those teams that's a trigger team now that they lost Emmanuel Clase for the next month or so. Who's going to shake up this market for us?
Yeah, I think those three starting pitchers you mentioned are the ones I'm interested in the most, because there's a lot of teams that are going to want to add somebody who could start game four of a playoff series, and there's always going to be that level of pitcher available. You can go get Mitch Keller. You can go get Charlie Morton. You know, even the bad teams, the obvious sellers, have a guy that the contenders can start in game four. but bad teams don't tend to have players who you can start in game one or game two. And there are several contenders who I think would prefer to add a frontline starter if possible. The Cubs, they could use one. The Mets, maybe. Are the Mets comfortable Kodai Senga in game one? Maybe, but they could use a two, I'd say. The Red Sox have Garrett Crochet for game one, but it gets pretty shaky fast after that. Maybe even the Blue Jays, who seem to have plenty of number three starters. So I'd look at teams trying to blow the Nationals away for Mackenzie Gore. I think that could potentially be the biggest deal of the deadline if he moves. I think Shane Bieber is a player that teams will be asking about. I saw rumors that a ton of teams will be scouting his next rehab start. I think that makes a ton of sense. And then Dylan Cease, as you mentioned, with the Padres with AJ Preller, one of the more aggressive and creative GMs out there, they're seemingly right up on their payroll limits, which would be the reason why they would deal Cease to create extra payroll to go add somewhere else. Dylan Cease could start game two for a lot of teams, even if he's had a bit of a shaky season. His ERA is higher than the Padres would like it to be. I could still definitely see a world where the Padres move Cease to cover a big hole elsewhere and then suddenly also have a bunch of money to go get somebody else at a third position. So I think he could be a piece that turns this from an average trade deadline to a very exciting one.
Talk a trade deadline with our guy, Eric Halterman for BrotoWire on the Progressive guest line. Eric, in addition to that, I know you have some plays for the Tuesday baseball slate. So what are you looking at in Rays Yankees tonight?
Yeah, this should be a fun one because of Rays starter Joe Boyle, who was a player that I was very happy to see get dealt to the Rays. He is one of those pitchers with a ton of stuff and almost no command, and that wasn't working out with the Athletics. But the Rays know how to get the most out of pitchers like this. They know how to get the most out of seemingly everybody on their roster, it seems. And Joe Boyle has got his control to a manageable level. An 11% strikeout rate, or sorry, an 11% walk rate at AAA is bad for most pitchers. It's good for Joe Boyle. And when it comes with a 33% strikeout rate, it's going to work. In 19 major league innings so far, he's got a 1.42 ERA and an 0.63 whip. Problem is, he's going up against Max Fried and the Yankees in this one. Max Fried has been elite, 2.62 ERA, 1.04 whip. He is absolutely a frontline starter here. So I think that makes the under pretty attractive. I mean, you already figure the Rays, who are 29th in WRC plus the last 30 days, they're not going to score much off Fried. So I like the under if you buy Joe Boyle shutting down a Yankees lineup that really doesn't look the same without Aaron Judge. Am I bold enough to take the Rays money line? I'm not sure because, again, the Rays have been slumping offensively and Max Fried is good, but I definitely like the under in this one.
You may or may not hear more about that in our Best Bets section coming up next. Eric, great stuff as always. Appreciate you coming on board. Happy trade deadline. Looking forward to our trade deadline review podcast on Thursday.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. We're going to have five regular RotoWire co-hosts trying to cram in everybody's takes on every important deal in under a minute, going live Thursday right after deadline. Should be a lot of fun.
Should be. Eric Halterman, everybody. Circus Survivor, the quest for $14.2 million will make its debut next Tuesday here on VSiN. The 10-part documentary on the world's largest legal football contest follows contestants as they chase the $14.2 million prize. Episodes air August 5th through 9th, August 12th through 16th at 9 p.m. Eastern on VSiN. For more, visit VSiN.com/Survivor. Best Bets coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you, closing out the show with some best bets with all of Jeff's plays for the Tuesday night Major League Baseball slate. One game in action right now, Jeff. Makeup game from all the way back in April. So doubleheader today for the Jays and the O's. Baltimore Orioles just broke this game open mere moments ago. Tyler O'Neill with a home run to left center. That scored both Ramon Laureano and Gunnar Henderson. Now 8-3 in the bottom of the sixth. Still one out for the O's to potentially do more damage here. So the AL leading Toronto Blue Jays in some trouble here in game one of that doubleheader. Jeff, let's take a look at some of your favorite plays for tonight. We'll start with what might be the game of the night, the series of the week, Cubs-Brewers in the NL Central. Saw the Brewers, you know, fall behind early last night, rally back for a big win. Now seeing the Brewers favored on the money line tonight, total coming in at 8. Colin Ray going up against Quinn Priester.
Yeah, and I don't trust Colin Ray at all. And even though it's a revenge game for Colin Ray, he former Brewer, great. But he's exactly the type of pitcher I don't trust. 17% K percentage, 8.7, 8.8 swing and strike percentage. Doesn't generate a lot of swing and miss. You're really just counting on him generating weak contact. 276 BABIP against, and that's kind of where he goes. But this against a good lineup, that's what I don't want to trust. So I'm trying to find ways to fade Colin Ray. Quinn Priester, excuse me, is kind of an improved version of Ray. Like, you know, he strikes out around 20%. He gets about 10% swing and miss. It's a little higher. Kind of maybe you could think about playing the over, except the juice is a little high on that 8. It was originally an 8.5 total on that one there. So I'm just going to go with the Brewers money line, say that they win again at home, minus 126. That's actually down from where it opened at. I think it was 133 initially. Now it's minus 126.
Well, Jeff, while you were breaking that game down, we have another run on the board for the Baltimore Orioles. So after Tyler O'Neill homers, next batter up, Ramon Urias homers to center field. So now 9-3 in favor of the O's. Again, that one is game one of a doubleheader, making that one up from April 11th. Dodgers-Reds, Jeff, we like the under in this game last night. We get game two of the series now. Tyler Glasnow taking on Nick Lodolo. And you're looking at another under here.
I am. Hey, I'm stealing your thunder, Nick. This was all you yesterday on your best bet. The Reds-Dodgers are kind of under machines right now at 9 runs. I feel like the totals in Reds home games have been kind of pointed towards what the ballpark has played like in previous years, or what the Reds have played like in previous years in this ballpark. They've actually been a much worse offense at home than they've been on the road. And just generally a pretty bad offense. 89 WRC plus in the last 30 days, 27th in baseball, 92 WRC plus at home overall. Nick Lodolo is a little worse at home. That does concern me, especially because he went with a complete game last time out. Sometimes you follow up on a lengthier outing with a suboptimal outing again, you know, next time out. But I'm kind of counting on Tyler Glasnow to shut down the Reds. So I'm still going to go the under with that there, minus 108. I think that there's some things you can look at there, and that's why I'm still going to go that route. Mm-hmm.
I like it. A little bit of a trend play here. Cincinnati, the second biggest home under team in baseball this season, 17-33-4 to the under at home. That's about 66%. Dodgers, 57% to the under on the road. So we will once again follow the trend on that one. Diamondbacks are on the road at the Detroit Tigers, kind of the struggling Detroit Tigers, Jeff, who have ceded that AL lead now to Toronto. Brandon Pfaadt taking on Casey Mize. I know you got a team total that you like.
I do. Okay, so keep in mind the Diamondbacks have already traded away Josh Naylor. They've been slumping just generally. Only scored one run yesterday. They're facing a pitcher in Casey Mize that got an extra day of rest. It was resting a knee. They're going to need Mize pretty strong the rest of the way. They just lost Reese Olson for the season, traded for Chris Paddock. Arizona striking out a little bit more lately, but also importantly, no Eugenio Suarez in the lineup today. Remember, he got hit by a pitch on the hand. If he's healthy, he's certain to be traded at the deadline. I'm going to fade the Diamondbacks offense here. Under 3.5 is the team total, plus 100.
All right, there we have it. Let's move on to a big series in the AL East, the Rays at Yankee Stadium tonight. Yankees big favorites on the money line, despite no Aaron Judge. We talked a little bit about this one with Eric Halterman in the previous segment. Joe Boyle taking on Max Fried. So should be a nice pitching advantage, you would think, for the New York Yankees. But I know you might be looking in the other direction, Jeff.
But wait, there's more. We just had Eric Halterman on last segment talking about his love for Joe Boyle. Joe Boyle is the fantasy hipster pitcher. I was on Joe Boyle before it was cool type of guy. And I'm not saying that Eric is a hipster. I'm just saying people are on Joe Boyle. And let's face it. Yeah, the walks are a concern. If the Yankees are patient at the plate tonight, it could go bad. If he gets the wrong home plate umpire, it could go bad. That's one thing I probably don't do enough of is I try to figure out who the home plate umpire is going to be and try to handicap that a little bit more. There's probably an edge to be had in that. But at any rate, since hitting the majors, Joe Boyle, 25.7 K percentage, 8.6 walk percentage this year. I mean, that's a fine ratio. It's not quite plus 20, but to the good, but it's close. You know, the Rays beat the Yankees yesterday behind Drew Rasmussen after a sloppy start to that game. I think it was like 3-2 after one or 2-2 after one in that one. Then they kind of shut it down after that. On the other side of things, Max Fried, his last true good quality start was on June 25th. Remember, he missed a start because of the blister on his hand, missed the All-Star game, missed that series in Atlanta. He hasn't quite been the same dominant pitcher that he was earlier in the year. I think this is too high of a price. I like the plus 161 we're getting with Tampa Bay. I without Aaron Judge in the lineup too, I'm pretty interested in going this route. I am going to back Boyle. I am going to back the Rays plus 61 on the money line.
All right, let's talk some Marlins Cardinals. Sandy Alcantara on the hill taking on Sonny Gray. We do have the Cardinals as pretty heavy home favorites in this one. 7.5 is our total. And I know you have a play on that total.
Yes, I do. And this is the trade deadline duel, perhaps. Although we were just talking about Sonny Gray probably not going to get dealt. I'd like to see him get dealt just because I want to see more trades. I just like trades. Sandy Alcantara, I mean, the Marlins would be practicing malpractice if they They would be performing malpractice if they did not trade Sandy Alcantara at the deadline. He's coming off his best start. If he has another good start today, I think they'll get it done. Ironically, both of these pitchers last faced the Padres at home in their last start, back-to-back days last week. But Alcantara had 7 shutout innings in his last time out. Sonny Gray typically is better at home than on the road. But I cited that last time out, and then he went and made a fool out of me there with a terrible start against those Padres. Mm-hmm. But at home, 3.39 ERA, 1.23 WHIP. On the road, 5.84 ERA. So he still holds that he's been worse on the road. He's just been pretty bad lately overall. You look at the last 30 days, 8.34 ERA, 1.63 WHIP. So he has not been very good. It's going to be 94 degrees in St. Louis today. That means the ball should carry. A light breeze may be blowing in, maybe hurts that just a little bit. But there's only projected to be a 5-mile-an-hour wind, so I don't think that really shuts down. So I'm going to go with the over 7.5 runs, taking all things into account here, minus 109. I might start looking into maybe taking a Marlins money line as well as possibly as a pivot there. Mm-hmm. You can get that at plus 138. So similar to the Rays Yankees line where you're getting an underdog at a pretty nice price. I don't mind like going that route too.
Jeff, you're never going to believe this, but the Orioles have scored another run. This time a Colton Cowser RBI single after Cedric Mullins doubled. So Lazaro Estrada wearing this one a little bit now for the Toronto Blue Jays. Still in the bottom of the sixth, 10-3 Baltimore Orioles. Let's get to our best bets of the night. They're brought to you by GBank, introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you need to do is open a GBank Visa signature card and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa signature card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match. VSiN completes the trifecta with a free 6-month VSiN Pro subscription. That's the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promo is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Jeff, a lot of options on this Major League Baseball slate. Where are we going for our GBank best bet?
We're going to go with that under in the Reds and Dodgers, under 9 runs scored on that one there. Just continuing the trend, getting that one at minus 108.
All right, I'm going with an under as well, Jeff. We are heading over to Yankee Stadium. We're taking the under 8.5 in Rays Yankees. Got that in at plus 100 this morning. Rays, big road under team, 60% to the under on the year. Yankees, a big home under team, also 60% to the under. That's the 6th highest home under rate in Major League Baseball. Rays have gone under the total in 7 of their last 9, including 4 in a row. I think they keep it up tonight. We'll leave you on that. We'll be back with you tomorrow afternoon. Keep it right here on VSiN. Make it rain with Adam Schein coming your way next on the Sports Betting Network.